Welcome to the Small Business Show. We have created a podcast to have candid and in-depth conversations with entrepreneur and professional we find fascinating. Learn the tips and tricks for marketing, running, and growing a small business. The Small Business Show is the official podcast of Garuda Promo and Branding Solutions. Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Small Business Show. My name is Swire Ho from Garuda Promo, your host for the show. My guest today is Valerie Hayes, the part-time COO. Valerie is on a mission to help small businesses beat the odds, push through the roadblocks to become an industry leader. She helped overburdened entrepreneurs, small business owners, and CEO run their company like a high-performance sports car, fast and effective. Seems like she's talking to me here. As a fractional COO, Valerie helps untangle everything that is not working smoothly, sort it out, and put it back together. Valerie is convinced that fewer businesses would fail if people knew how to run the business well and easy it can be. How are you doing, Valerie?
I'm great, Swire. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
It really, like, your bio is speaking to me directly. And before we start, I was wondering, how do you get into become a fractional COO, and what do you like about what you do?
That's a great question. I had another business for almost 20 years. I started in 2002, and it was a public speaking coaching business in a specific niche. And then with COVID, that niche imploded because nobody was public speaking. And I decided to take that time during COVID to take some courses, do some coaching programs, learn some new marketing techniques. And I noticed that a lot of people in the courses were really, really struggling to implement what was being covered. And it was because they were trying to run before they'd learned how to walk. And so they were spending lots of time and money in these courses and programs, but it wasn't benefiting their business. And the coaches running the programs didn't realize what the underlying issue was, that they didn't actually know how to run a business before they were trying to grow the business, right? And although it's tempting to focus just on growing the business, actually how you run the business is what grows the business. So at the same time that was happening, a professional friend of mine had a friend who was struggling and needed a general manager for his business. So I came in on a project basis and started working with him. And then at the end of the project, he asked me to stay on as a fractional COO. And fractional COO is just fractional being just a fancy word, because you know how consultants are. We like fancy words. It's just a fancy word for part-time. And a part-time COO works with businesses who are not small, not big enough to need a full-time COO, right? They're not willing to make that commitment to the full-time COO salary and perks, which can be, you know, quite hefty. And so the part-time COO works with the business to help them grow until the point where they need a full-time COO. And then ideally, I will have been able to help someone internal to the company grow and develop during the time I'm there so that they can just slide right into the COO position. And if that's not the case, I help them find someone.
Okay, thanks for sharing. So your role as a fractional COO is not like a consultant where you just tell them this is what you do and you move on. And you're not similar to a coach where they work with just one person. You actually go in and work as a team and see what needs to be helped, and then actually train, you know, people internally to, at a certain point, to take over that task.
That's exactly right. To the rest of the employees, I feel just like another team member who is supporting the CEO. I support the CEO in their vision and their strategic plan, and then I implement it. So my responsibility is to provide work direction and leadership to the different functions of the business. And I might be interacting with people who are at a director level or who are at an entry level. And my job is to get things done, but to coach and mentor people along the way, because it's easier to grow people as the business grows than to grow to a certain point and then have to bring people in from the outside, right? It's just most efficient. So it's a sort of a balancing act between being productive and getting things done and growing and developing the people as the business grows. But yes, I work right alongside the people. So even though I am only working typically 8 to 10 hours a week per client, if you were to ask the employees how much I work a week, they would probably say 30 to 40 hours a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're a very effective person.
Very efficient, and I've learned how to communicate in a way that really supports what the clients are doing. It's really interesting. There have been studies, Swire, that have shown that the typical CEO or COO, I'm sorry, the typical COO in a small business, when they're hiring a full-time COO, that COO is typically doing some other functions of the job, such as sales or marketing or maybe finance. And that in their role as COO, they're probably only spending 8 to 10 hours a week doing actual COO work. So a fractional COO is doing just about the same amount of work a full-time COO work is, but the fractional COO isn't focusing on the other things that the team members are doing.
Let's dig deeper. So when you go into a client, you know, what is the first thing that you want to find out to see what the dynamics are? And then, you know, obviously to uncover which area they need help on, and then, you know, dive deeper in it. What is your general process?
Typically, I, of course, have had some one or more introductory calls with the CEO to understand his concerns and what he's observing or she's feeling like is happening within the business. And then I start attending meetings, weekly meetings, either at the management or leadership level or even at department level. I often also interview individual employees, and we call them get-to-know-you appointments. So I get to know them and ask them what they think are issues in the business and, you know, the opportunities they see to grow the business. And then I circle back to the COO and let her know what, you know, needs to be done and the sequence. A lot of people sort of have a hunch of what needs to be fixed, but it's frequent that they get the sequencing of it wrong. When you're making change in an organization, either to process or how people are operating or even bringing in new people or moving people around, there's a lot of natural resistance. Even if people are frustrated with how a business is operating and feel like, you know, it should be better and they're all in for change, they want you to change, not me, right? They don't want to change what they're doing. They want everyone else to change. So the sequence that you implement change really can help reduce resistance, both in the short and long term. So it's really more of an art than a science. You come in and you get to know the company. You observe how organizational processes are working, either by sitting in on meetings or being a participant in the actual workflow, get different feedback. And it's usually pretty obvious to me within 2 to 4 weeks what the root cause of the problem is, because sometimes what the business owner, what he or she has said is the issue is really a symptom of the problem. It's not the root cause of the problem.
Well said. So I really like this statement, and I wanted to elaborate more on that. You know, you said that how you run your business is what creates your business. So what do you mean by that, and how do we follow that approach?
So I think it's really, really easy to get sucked into the excitement of sales and marketing, you know, grow your business, you know, 3%, you know, 300% within 6 months. And those are always very exciting. It's very sexy, very cool, right? But sales and marketing does not create your business, because if your business is not well run, even if you do expand sales and marketing, you're going to implode because you don't have the support system or structure in place. How well you run your business is what's going to cause your business to grow. How well you run your business is what causes your reputation within the marketplace with clients or customers. How well you run your business contributes to the frustration that you or your employees have. And I think when people think about growing their business or starting, launching a business, they're really, really focused on sales and marketing, right? And obviously, sales and marketing is super important. Otherwise, you don't have a business, right? If you would just carve out 8 hours a week to focus on how well you're running your business, is everything running smoothly? Am I communicating proactively, not reactively? Am I putting processes in place, not complicated processes? Processes for a growing business should be streamlined, efficient, and fluid. You shouldn't need, you know, tons and tons of SOPs unless you're a huge corporate situation, right? It's really, instead of focusing on sales and marketing to grow your business, if you focus on how well you run your business overall, then you'll have the structure and support system in place to support those increased sales that you get to go out and, you know, do the sexy, cool thing and generate.
I recently went to a small business conference. You know, there was a speaker who was a consultant, shared the story. And what she said, you know, she worked with a client who owns a staffing agency. It was before the pandemic. They're growing, you know, like you said, 200%, 300% per year for 5 years. So they now have a lot of people hire to grow that company because they're getting all the sales in. But when the pandemic hits, their clients stop hiring for, you know, obvious reasons. And then it drops, and then out to the ultimate point that they couldn't make payrolls anymore. And then ultimately the company went bankrupt. So I think you're right. So you might be growing, you might be having exciting product and services coming out, but you know, you still need to watch your back end, I would say, you know, to how you're functioning. And do you really want it to hire 10 or 15 more people because you just got one extra deal that you have?
Right. I think that's an important observation. COVID really taught a harsh lesson to a lot of businesses about the importance of business continuity and planning around risk. And it's not something that typically small businesses have had to do in the past, right? Usually, you know, we're looking at sort of a corporation or an enterprise organization when we're talking about business continuity. But with COVID, you know, the businesses that had at least a minimal online presence, digital marketing presence, or were able to rapidly expand their online presence were able to survive while many of the brick and mortars went under. Even if, like, for example, there's a great yoga studio down the road that I used to go to, loved it, it was fabulous. They did not have any digital presence or online presence. So when COVID hit, they were not one of the sort of workout studios that was able to make the switch to doing online classes so that the revenue continued. And I felt really badly for her because she had saved for 10 years to start her own yoga business and she went under in less than 6 months.
Wow. Yeah, I hear stories like that. And on the flip side, though, you know, I've learned a lot of stories and talked to guests on the show that they're able to embrace and see the change quickly, and they're actually coming out better than what they had, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, today's marketplace has the ability to pivot is very important in today's marketplace, and it may be a subtle pivot or it may be a big pivot. Like you heard about some of those companies that were like making fabrication for cars and they suddenly pivoted when we're manufacturing masks, right? Mm-hmm. You know, just like overnight, they're manufacturing masks. Pivoting and responding to changes in the marketplace is really important because of digital and, you know, digital marketing and technology and online presence, things evolve much more faster than they used to. Even the product cycle, the appeal of a product or service is much shorter than it used to be. It's very, very hard to compete in today's marketplace and be prepared for unexpected things. There could be a variety of unexpected things, natural disasters. We've had a lot of natural disasters. So pandemics aren't the only thing. How well you run your business can also help you be prepared to pivot if you're faced with that need.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. And I want to bring up another statement that you make for me. And speaking as a small business professional running my own company, hire people who are better than you. I think this is a concept that a lot of us in small business couldn't let go. Like, I am supposed to be the best, right, within the company. So I think that's an easy statement to understand. But then to actually do it, I think it's very difficult for a lot of people in small business. Do you agree?
I think it's extremely difficult. And hiring, you know, because when you first start out, you're doing everything and that's really, really exciting and you can do it at that level. And then you hire a few team members and you're still able to do everything at the level that you need to do it. But as your business grows, the expertise required in each one of your functional areas grows as well. And we can't all be excellent at everything. That's just, that human being just not exists. Not even Elon Musk is excellent at everything, right? And so what you need to do is when you're looking to bring someone into a functional area, maybe it's sales or maybe it's finance or maybe it's operations. You need to bring in someone who is better than you in that functional area, because what you're trying to do is grow that functional area. You've gotten it to where it is, but now realistically, you don't have the skills, experience, and background to get to where it needs to be. So a lot of people think, well, I'm a smart business owner. I can do this on my own. I can do that. I can figure this out. I can do this on my own. The smartest business owners know to hire people smarter than themselves in their area of weakness. So for example, I would never put myself in charge of an engineering department. Mm-hmm. And I would want to hire an engineer that when they come in and talk about their engineering skills and backgrounds, I have no idea what they're saying. but it sounds really, really impressive, right? And I would be sort of intimidated by their skill set. I would think, wow, they know so much more than me. If you're interviewing someone like that for a position, and of course they have to have the personality fit and cultural fit and everything, you should snap them up, because you're buying speed. When you're bringing people into your organization, you're buying speed to grow your business faster, and you want to get the best speed you can.
Yeah, I really love that analogy. And I think if you really want to be a successful entrepreneur, if you're able to put together a team, maybe really they are not you who could do 100% of what you do, but if you bring it up to speed, you know, maybe 80%, that's good enough. And if you really wanted to grow more, you can hire another person who will bring in another, maybe even 60, 70%, then your productivity will be higher, because yes, you could do it all, but then you might drive yourself crazy.
Right. And then as you're delegating those duties and responsibilities of things that aren't natural strengths for you, you know, you're stronger in other areas, then you're spending more time working in your zone of genius, right? And the more time you spend in your zone of genius, the more money you're going to make. It's just as simple as that. When you try to do everything and do things that you're not naturally good at, or you're not naturally passionate about, like, for example, I know that these people exist, but I cannot imagine myself being passionate about accounting. I could do it. I have done it. I can make it work, but I'm not passionate about it or excited about it, right? So I would never hire me as an accountant. As a matter of fact, I have an accountant who's so much better than I am, and you know, she really gets into it. So delegating those duties and responsibilities to someone else enables you to work in your zone of genius, and that's where the money is.
Let's talk more about letting go, right? You know, I think I'm sure that you hear this a lot when you go into a client, you know, so maybe the CEO or the founder really are attached to the business. How would you guide them, and how would you uncover things that maybe you should let that go? You know, there are someone out there who can really help you. Like, what would be that conversation look like?
Well, it's really a matter of trust, because the business, you know, that's their baby. They've been with it. It was their idea. They've brought it along, and they think of it as their baby. And of course, they think that nobody can take care of their baby better than they can. Until you run into a babysitter that can, right? And you're like, wow, okay. So it's about trust. You come in and you start with some smaller projects that aren't really risky for the client to let go of control for, and that, you know, or to let other members of the team handle. And you teach other members of the team. It's a different communication now, right? Because before, the owner was just telling them what to do and how to do it, right? And now we need the owner to be delegating them and looking to them for recommendations. So we learn how to communicate that. We learn what realistic expectations are. Often business owners aren't able to estimate time for employees as well as their estimate time for themselves. So when I'm working with someone at first, it's really just a matter of building trust between the CEO and myself, and then trust between myself and the team, and then trust so that the team can tell the business owner or CEO what they need to know. Because a lot of small business organizations struggle with a yes environment, right? No matter what the boss says, the team says yes, even when it's a bad idea and they know it, because no one is accustomed to talking back to the boss, right? Every business owner, you know, worth their salt is going to say that they have always had at least one person who needs to say, no, that's not a good idea, or yes, it is a good idea, but we should do it differently. Mm-hmm. And that's typically what my role is.
Mm. And I think it's better too, you know, if you are, you know, seeing it as a, I would say, outside point of view, and then you understand, you know, what the process is like, and you talk to the employees working within the company. And I think you are able to make a judgment unattached, right? Because if you say it's your baby, you can't tell people your baby, it's, I don't want to use the word, it's not nice and smile. You know, there are things that, you know, you might need to change to make your baby to become a better grown up, so to speak.
Right. It's always hard to see your own stuff. You're almost too close to it, right? And that doesn't make you less of a person or a bad leader or a bad CEO, business owner. It just means you're just like everybody else. It's hardest to see your own stuff. So bringing in a fresh perspective is so beneficial.
For all of us out there, you know, who obviously work really hard in a business, in 2023, what are some of the suggestions that you would want us to consider running our own company? I know this is a big question, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I think there are two things that small businesses really need to make sure they're focused on. And the first one is to make sure you're tracking your financials. Mm-hmm. A lot of small businesses do not do monthly P&L reports. They just wait to the end of the quarter to pay taxes or perhaps the end of the year. P&L reports are important not only for tax reporting purposes, because no one wants to go to jail, but because it's really the information in your P&L can help you spot developing issues that you haven't noticed, right? Mm-hmm. We tend to think of P&L or annual revenue as a scorecard. Oh, I did 100,000. I did 500,000. I did 1 million last year. And you know, we sort of feel good about ourselves and it's kind of an ego moment, right? But your P&L is really data that is feedback to help you make decisions. That's the total purpose of the P&L. If you get hung up in what the total numbers is of your profit or just your annual revenue or your monthly revenue, you're not reading it correctly. And so I would really challenge people to just do a basic P&L every month. You know, there's lots of services online that will do this for you, lots of softwares that can make it very easy for you to integrate with your bank and your credit card statement. The P&L, the primary reason businesses go under is because they didn't manage their finances. And if you're not checking your finances at least once a month, there's no way you're going to manage them. And so it's more likely that you go under. The second thing I would suggest to people that they focus on is I think we're heading into a real talent retention issue. The recruiters out there online today are sort of like piranhas, right? They're just like swimming around really fast, trying to bite any red meat that they can find to send to a client company. So I think people should make sure that they're not taking their top talent for granted, or even just their steady, reliable talent, right? Because there are recruiters working full-time, sort of 24 hours a day, 365, on the internet, trying to find your talent and lure them away. And so you need to make sure that you've created a positive work environment, that you're compensating correctly. A lot of small businesses try to skimp on payroll because it tends to be a large part of business expense, which is totally understandable. The challenge with that is that you risk someone luring them away with a higher salary, right? So you shouldn't just try to pay a high salary or pay a low salary with good work environment. You should try to create an employment experience that is going to attract and retain the kind of people that you want to work with, that will be happy about working with you and be loyal to you and not be lured away, you know, every time they get an email in their inbox about a new job. And that's a hard one too, because that does involve budget, right? If I give people a raise, that's more money. Is that eroding my profit? And so that's where you have to really think about being efficient and effective with your budget so that you're spending the money on the right things. Maybe you need to stop attending twice a year big mastermind events so that you can give your team a raise. So it could be something as simple as that.
I think both points are very important. And I especially wanted to share an experience. You know, I know that small business, when you're at the point that you're actually going after clients that are much bigger than, you know, what you're accustomed to. So that transition sometimes is scary, because when you work with a larger client, they almost guarantee that they won't pay up front. Maybe it's a payment term, or you have to come up with the cash to actually produce or hire the personnel just to do that contract or project, you know, before you get paid. So I think that's how a lot of small businesses get into the trap with cash flow. What if they give you a really big contract that over 50% of your revenue for the year, for example? Are you really capable and set up to take that job? What is something that goes wrong between the contract? Are you able to supply the payroll to your current employees? So I think I've heard a lot of horrible story where people have the biggest contract of their life and then they went under because something went wrong, or they couldn't finish the job before they run out of money.
That is a very realistic concern. And unfortunately, I've had three friends who've experienced that, which is why I always encourage businesses to make sure they've diversified their income stream. If you're relying on one or two clients to support your business, you're just asking for trouble, because something is going to happen. You know, a new CEO could come in for that, you know, that business, and they don't like you. They want to hire their cousin or something. And, you know, or they might go out of business. You know, lots of businesses we've heard about recently, even big businesses have gone bankrupt. So I'm not really comfortable with one or two clients as your major revenue stream. So if you do get a big contract, I think what you try to do is, if that's the reality of your business and that's what you're looking at, I think what you try to do is make sure you have an attorney look at the contract. Mm. A lot of times small businesses cut corners and they download these contracts from these law groups online. Yeah, and they're great if it's a small kind of, you know, job and no big deal. But if you're looking at probably 20% or more of your revenue, your annual revenue for that particular project, you probably want to have that contract specifically reviewed by an attorney to make sure that you have protections in place to protect you and your employees in case something goes wrong at some point along the deal.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And I would say in my own experience, and obviously I've had mistakes so to share with everyone, don't go outside of your normal procedure for a big client. If you have a certain procedure to do your job the certain way, don't change it because they're a bigger company, you know, and then you go outside of your normal protocol. I would say that's sometimes how you get into trouble.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's, we all get excited and we're very eager for
a lot of money.
Paycheck. Yeah. And then, oh, and what if they tell their friends? They're going to call me too. And it's very, very exciting. But it's important to remember that the reason they hired you was because of the way you did work with the smaller clients. And you should keep doing that same work because that's what they want you to deliver. Now, they probably, would like a few perks and a few freebies along the way. But the problem with that is the more you accommodate them and give in to them, the less they respect you as a business owner and the less leverage you have to negotiate in the future. So you need to act as peers, even if this is a huge, gigantic client. You need to treat each other with the same respect you would treat a peer, and also understand that the contract is to protect you as to protect them, right? Because if they get dissatisfied with anything, that they have an appropriate course of action. So yeah, I totally agree with you, Swire. I think that's good advice. Don't change what you're doing just because you have a big client.
Yeah, I think a lot of times that's where it goes wrong because, you know, maybe you granted a more favorable terms to the client, or maybe you are promising more of your, I don't know, bells and whistles, you know, to get that deal, to sweeten it, right? You know, because you might be up against other bigger company, bigger than you do. So you want to get deal. I do firmly believe that there is always a fit to a certain business, because if you give me business that I'm not able to do, even if it's a lot bigger than what I normally would, I would say no to it because I just couldn't fulfill the requirement. Maybe it fits for a certain type of company, but at this point with what I have available, I might not be able to fulfill that.
I totally agree with that philosophy. I've always believed that as a business owner myself, I should make the decisions that's best for the client. And if I'm not the best fit for that client, or I'm not going to be able to achieve the outcome that they're looking for, I need to tell them that. And I believe that if, for me anyway, it's really worked that if you do what's right for the client, the money will follow. And it has. People trust that if I say I can and will do something, that I will. And that if I say I can't, they trust that I have their best interests at heart. I unfortunately have worked with several companies that were so eager to close a deal that they just cut down to negligible profit margin, right? And then the inevitable scope creep happens and they've actually lost money on the deal in the long run. Mm. Right. So this great big fish that they landed that they thought was going to, you know, sustain the whole village was gobbled up in 2 months. And that's definitely a mistake that people should try to avoid if possible.
Yeah. And then you're like Valerie said, you should look at your P&L, maybe your sales report to see, you know, obviously a bigger client come in or bigger job in production come in, you got to ramp up your personnel. Maybe you have to buy more material. Maybe you need a bigger office space. Are you ready for it? And at the back end, are you factoring those to your net profit? You know, because like you said, Valerie, maybe you get this really big job, but at the end, you're hiring your additional process actually eat up all your profits. So
Right. Then
you don't take that job, you're like.
Right. And if you're anticipating that that's going to be then the case, and this is really a big opportunity for you, you can negotiate that into part of the contract. that the client understands that you'll be investing in additional team members and additional, perhaps you need additional equipment and additional office space, and that you're going to be making a sizable expenditure to meet their needs. And so that you require a more significant amount of notice to cancel the contract instead of, you know, a 30-day notice. We might be looking at a 3 to 4 month notice so that you have plenty of notice to either try to replace that revenue that you're anticipating losing or help people transition from the organization and find other jobs. So if you think that's going to be the case, try to negotiate a longer notice phase if the client wants to end the contract.
Yeah, thank you so much for all the good advice. So Valerie, for listeners who have individual questions who might wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way to connect?
Well, it's really easy to find me. I'm valeriehayes.com, valeriehayes.com. And my email is just as easy, valerie@valeriehayes.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Valerie M as in Mary Hayes. I respond to every message. It's not a virtual assistant. It's not a salesperson. We'll continue to operate with our philosophy that we'll answer your question or give you the advice that we think is right for you, the client. And, you know, if it's a fit for us long-term, great. If it's not, you know, that's good too. Our hope is just to help small businesses survive and beat the odds.
Thank you so much for coming on to the show today, Valerie.
Thanks, Swear. It was great to be here.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the podcast and share with your friends or colleagues who might benefit from the conversation. Any questions or feedback, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with you. Our show is live streamed both on YouTube and LinkedIn every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'll see you next time.